WPR and Public Radio is supported by the Built on Dreams Media Network and from listeners like you. Thank you.
Terry M. Brown, welcome back. We really do have to stop meeting like this. People will definitely talk when they hear that I'm right on you with your next book right after the first one. I mean, like, what's going on here? You're like a writing machine. You're a writing machine.
Yeah, so it's 3 books in 3 years. Every January, I put out a book. You never know, though. I might mess things up and put one out earlier than that.
Daughters of Green Mountain Gap. You have written an Appalachian granny woman. Of course, when I think about that, I think about the Beverly Hillbillies grandma. Sorry, don't mind me. A daughter on a crusade, a granddaughter caught between the two. What, if anything, in your background gave you the entry to write about such things?
You're going to laugh at this, because the reason this book was written is because I had a wart on my thumb. That is the honest to God truth. I had a primary care appointment, just a regular checkup. I said to my primary care, hey, while I'm here, I have this wart on my thumb. Can you remove it for me? And she said, oh, no, I would have to send you to a specialist. So I just went to the pharmacy and got a patch. 2 weeks later, I'm talking to my brother on the phone. We were complaining about health care and the fact that primary care doctors do very little anymore. And I told him about this wart and how I was going to have to go to a specialist. And instead, I just got a patch. And he said to me, why didn't you have someone talk it off? Yeah, I have a friend that talks off warts. I'm the person in the family that's gullible. I'm often told stories so that at Christmas they can say things like, you remember that time when we told Terry? And then everybody laughs. So I didn't fall for it. And I just kind of said, yeah, huh? And off we went. But when we got off the phone, the research junkie in me had to know if there was really such a thing. And I figured he'd never know. So I Googled it. And there are people who can talk to a wart and within a week it will fall off. Of course, I did more Googling. Before long, I am in the world of what is known as a granny woman, which is an Appalachian healer, and they're usually generational. They do things like talk off warts. They can blow in a person's mouth and rush will disappear. They can talk to babies who are breech in the womb and get them to flip. And then they also use all of the roots and the herbs and the natural things to heal people. Well, I found this utterly fascinating, and I kept digging and digging. And before long, a character by the name of Maggie was living in my head, and Daughters of Green Mountain Gap was born.
So you never lived in that environment?
No, I just did a lot of research. I love research, and I love writing. And I love being able to combine those two. Writing the historical fiction the way I do is just a really great way to combine both of those loves. I'm really good at finding facts that are going to make a story move forward. And that's one of the things that I love when I'm researching, is looking for those little facts that I'm going to be able to use that are going to be that twist in a story.
Your main character, Maggie McCory, a generational healer woman, relying on family traditions, folklore, and beliefs gleaned from a local Cherokee tribe. This certainly sounds like a shaman.
I'm not sure if Cherokee calls them shaman, but a medicine man, a shaman, whatever their native word for that is, that's who she meets. What she actually does is she meets a shaman's son, and he introduces her to his father when he finds out that she heals. She makes yearly pilgrimages to the Cherokee village and learns from him each year and brings things back that she finds valuable. She finds a little bit of pushback in her community. There are a lot of people who find the native to be less than, and they're not sure that they want her medicine. And she actually suggests that she won't stay then. She will move on and she'll find someplace else to practice. And they recognize that, okay, we'll take it because we don't want to be left alone.
How do you navigate the complexities in your stories?
Wow. I don't know. I'm a pantser, so I don't plot things out. I do keep like a little running list next to me as I'm writing so that if something comes up and I recognize I should have added something earlier in the story, or this isn't going to make sense, or I need to change something earlier in the story so that this spot will work, I just jot these notes down. And then once I've gotten the first draft out, I go back with those notes and I make all of those changes that are necessary. And then I let it sit. And I usually let it sit for anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks. And then I pick it up again and read it. And then I make more notes. What do I need more of? What isn't sounding good to me? I fill those in. And then I run it through a program that just helps me look for things like the words that I used too many times, or what they call weak words.
Do you use any sort of online assistance? And if so, do you like it?
AutoCrit. It's like auto and then C-R-I-T. I do like it. It is not as good as a human editor. I do use a human editor, but I find that it helps me get rid of some of the issues that I can handle on my own and that I can find on my own. Then I love to give it to an editor at that point and say, okay, I've kind of done what I can do with this. Now I need fresh eyes, someone who can say, I need more of this character, or I feel like we wandered too far before something happened, or the things that I don't see because I'm so intimately involved with the story. You have to be careful when using something like those that it doesn't start sounding robotic, or that it doesn't sound like you accidentally fell into a thesaurus and then just started throwing the words out on the page. So you have to be careful. You can definitely overuse it because, for instance, AutoCrit will tell you words that are weak. And you go and look at those words, and sometimes maybe a weak word, but it's exactly what needs to be said, particularly if it's in conversation. If you have a conversation about two backwoods people in North Carolina in the 1890s, they're not going to be using these big fancy words that you find, because you have to also remember what is it that you're trying to do here. So I do run it through that program, and it just gives me ideas of what do I need to look at. This does absolutely no rewriting. AutoCrit doesn't write anything. It will highlight things.
Right.
So for instance, if you go through and you say, what were the weak words? It will give you a list over to the right, and it will have those words highlighted, and it will tell you that you used this number of weak words and that this one you used 87 times. I always go and say, okay, well, I'm going to look at these top 10 and take a look. And sometimes it's like, well, it may be a weak word, but it is exactly what needs to be said. They also have overused words. When you're doing a book about healing and herbs and roots, this is what she deals with in 90% of her day. You're going to use the word healing, herbs, roots too many times, but there isn't anything else to say. Go and look at, like, what does need correcting?
The last time we talked, I asked you, who was your favorite character to write? And you said it was actually coming up in this book. So I'm going to ask you this question again. Who was your favorite character that you wrote about, and why is that person your favorite?
I've really enjoyed writing Maggie. She's the granny woman. The reason I enjoyed writing her is she can see life in a way that I wish that I could do. She has this ability to see something different. And instead of rejecting it, being afraid, she has a way of saying, that's different. How can I take that and use it within my own framework? She doesn't change who she is or what she believes, but she takes other people's beliefs and she says, how can I hang that on what is me? Just love that ability that allows her to see life in a way that is not my way or the highway.
When you started to write this granny woman, did you have any inkling about Granny in the Beverly Hillbillies? I know it's a stretch, but there's too many similarities.
No, and I think because when I wrote Maggie, I did not think of her as a granny woman. I thought of her as a healer. And granny woman is a term. It's just a term that means healer. Whereas the granny on the Beverly Hillbillies, she was granny. I actually have had people say to me, Granny woman is redundant, and you shouldn't be writing that because she's either a granny or she's a woman.
You could look at it as the Department of Redundancy Department.
And I understand where they're coming from, but I also know it is an actual Appalachian term that people to this day still use. And then they have a lot of these healing traditions as well, that even today, we have all this modern medicine and people are still turning back towards some of these more natural remedies to see if maybe they won't have the same kinds of side effects that they're having with some of the more modern drugs that we're putting into our systems. So I think there's the heritage in the Appalachian Mountains is very strong. And yet we can focus, you can focus on the stills if you want to, but you could also focus on the music or the stories or the family ties. A lot of very strong family history that just runs for generations.
What do you want people to get out of your book?
When they walk away from this book, I want them to be thinking about, when you get something new, do you have to throw away something old? Or can you find good in both? Can you live your life using the good in both? But not just in old and new, but in different cultures, different traditions, different ideas. Is it possible for you to look at both sides, find the good, and then live using those